Marks the last of the full shirim that we have on Chana and Shmuel, and we will be having something smaller next week at the Siyum, a discussion about the follow-up of the story. But in and of itself, this is the last shir of Shmuel and Chana per se, and that's somewhat sad. But at the same time, it's good to end on a song. So what we're going to be doing is the song of Chana, which is to be found at the beginning of the second perek. This is the very beginning of the second chapter of Shmuel, which can be found in the sources. Let me just check over here. It's page 4 at the very bottom. Fantastic. So the Perek Bey is at the very bottom. So you'll notice that what we went through the episode. We went through the narrative. This is now a reflection on the narrative. The song is now discussing what happened. And what's fascinating about the song is it's only 10 psukim long, but there are depths within depths in this song itself. And we're not going to go to all the details because each Mefarish has really a plethora, a whole discussion of the details and how it relates as a whole and the parts. I'd like to get just an overall picture before moving on to the second part of today's share, which is going to be an eon, just comparing the end of Shoftim and Shmuel, the beginning of Shmuel within a specific motif. So the first thing to notice is that when you read through these 10 psukim, which we're about to, what we should notice is that there are some events which are going to be clearly out of the life of Chana, which clearly are not referring or seem not to be referring to her specific situation. And you deal with the situation when we go through Tehillim, you'll find certain mizmorim that refer to events which are clearly not within the life of David or anybody preceding him. And the question is, how do you deal with those kind of things? So just as a means introduction to the song, let's consider this as, what is this? What exactly is she doing over here? Before we get to the details, what is happening? How can she be relating to things beyond her lifetime? So for that, I'd like to just, as a means of introduction, turn our attention to the Radak. This Radak summarizes two extreme approaches, which can be found on page 7. On page 7 in source 8, this Radak summarizes the two perspectives that we should take when reading this. The Radak says the following. This is in source 8. Vatispalel Chana vatomar. So she prays and she says, Hispalalo lifnei Hashem. She prays in front of God. V'nosna loy shevach v'hoda'a. So she gives God praise and thanks. Al haben shenasana, on the child that was given to her. So she thanks and she prays. Two components within the word hispalel, meaning on a daily basis when we are mispalel, we daven, what the Aradak is accentuating is that it's not just requests, it's not just thanks, it's a combination of both, just to be aware of that point. But Targum Yonasan and the Aramaic translation of Yonasan on the side says the following, but Tzelias Chana Baruach Nevuah. She prayed, but not just praying. What he's inserting over here is through prophecy. When she was praying, when she was singing, she wasn't just speaking her own words. There was some divine nature within those words. V'omras, and she said, Kvar Shmuel b'ri asid l'mihavi neviya al Yisrael. I know that my son Shmuel will be a Navi, will be a prophet and leader of the nation of Israel. V'gomer, okay, so Targum Yonasan Shirazu Al Malche Umas Ha'olam, and it also alludes not just to Shmuel, her son, and the future of Shmuel, but also an expansive look at all of Israel's future, the future kings of Israel. Val Knesset Israel, and on the assembly of Israel, the pasuk En Kadosh Ka Hashem, and on the verse which says, "There's no holy one like God." Omar al Sancheriv Malko de Asur is talking about Sancheriv, the king who's about to come in. Over 200 years' time, the king of Assyria, Isnabais. She's prophesizing on that. V'omras b'pasuk al tarbu Omar. And when she says, "Don't speak so arrogantly," she says, "Al Nebuchadnezzar Malka de Bavel Isnabais." She's referring to later on the general of the Babylonian Empire, Nebuchadnezzar, and so on and so forth. The Targum goes on to identify different stages in Jewish history which are about to come in many centuries to come is what Chana is referring to. How so? Because this wasn't her personal song, this was a song referring to there was actually an input, there was a divine input into part of her words. That's approach number one, says the Radak, based on the Targum Yonasan, which is actually part of Chazal. Yonasan ben Aziel was a student of Hillel, right? So we're talking about the times of the Mishnah. That's approach number one, says the Radak. Approach number two, just for the sake of brevity, if you skip down to the second underlining, ulefi apshat, but according to the most simple level, says the Radak, pascha chana b'shirazu al shalvei olam. She says, you know, she's talking about the people who are content with the world, umisga'in al anvei eretz v'shvelim, and these content people become arrogant over in regards to the lowly people in the world. Ki HaKadosh Baruch Hu ro'eh hakol u'mashpil geim u'magbir shvalim. Because God is the one who rectifies that imbalance, says Chana. K'moy shehaya hadavar aleha v'alpinina sarasa. As it was in her life, that Penina was the person who was arrogant, the person who was denigrating, aggravating her situation, and in the end of the day, the tables turn. Says the Radak, you know what? Cut out all the future, cut out the nevuah. She's talking about her life, her experience, and she expands it somewhat she generalizes it to other people in the same situation. It's important just to see in the realm of the Radak, what he does is he paints two distinct roads to be able to, with which to be out there, there are prisms with which to look through at the song. Is it talking about primarily prophetic vision for the future? Or is it simply an expansion or reflection of her personal life and how it relates to others in that generation? That's the way the Radak points this. But let me just add just one bridge. These are the two extremes the Radak paints. But the Abar Benel says, and looking at this, he says, we know the rules of prophecy. When it comes to prophecy, except if you're Moshe Rabbeinu, no prophet receives lucid nevuah. Nobody has an awake discourse with God or is able to, in an awake state, relay prophecy. So what's happening? Is Chana asleep and she wakes up and says this song because she received this in a nevuah the night before? It doesn't seem likely that the spontaneous, beautiful song which she's presenting is something which is not actually spontaneous. It's really just fed in as nevuah. But on the other hand, we're going to see that there are a few elements which refer to the future clearly and beyond argument refer to the future. Says the Abar Benel, the middle approach, which I think is important when analyzing this, is she was talking about her situation, but she was endowed with Ruach HaKodesh. Ruach HaKodesh means she had some form of divine inspiration that there were certain things that she said which resonated through history. She has certain things which she said, although referring to her personal situation, will resonate throughout history and will be applicable through to her children and to Israel as a whole. So just to view it in these three approaches, I think this is a very valuable methodological point in general, and it applies itself across Tehillim. And you're going to see the Mefarshim taking different sides regarding different Mizmorei Tehillim as well. You have over here a personal reflection on a situation in a person's life. It seems to be globalized somewhat, but it also seems to be referring to future things. How do you deal with that? Is it completely personal, and we're relating to that person? We're relating to David HaMelech in the cave? Or is it completely self-negating, and it's referring to the future completely? Or do you say somewhere in between? It's referring to their personal events, but somehow there's a spark of inspiration within that we relate to throughout history as well, says the Abba Benel in the middle over there. That's the plethora, that's the spectrum with which we should approach the song. And without much further ado, now we have that, so it's just important to start with that now as we go through the specific details. With that in mind, let's return to page 4 where it actually starts the song. So we have over here, and I'm going to go through this somewhat fast. I don't want to tarry too much on the details because we have a lot of very exciting things to learn about today. For myself included, as I go through this, I learn more and more. We have the first pasuk. Vatispalel Chana, and Chana prays. Vatomar olatz libi v'Hashem. My heart is exulting in God. Ramah karni v'Hashem. My horn, which literally means a horn, but it means her pride, as used in Tanakh. My pride has been brought high by God or in God. Rachav pialovai. My mouth is broadened over my enemies, kisomachti bishuasecha, because I have rejoiced over your salvation. Okay, So here we have the starting point. Notice, and this is for everybody in the last few weeks. This is not the first time that the word vatispalel has come. We've met the word vatispalel. We've seen this before. Where else? Vatispalel Chana was in the first parak 2. In which situation? When she was making a plea, right? When she was making a plea at the entrance of the Mishkan, it also is the word used is vatispalel, that she davened, she prayed. Important point: the Da'at Mikra points out is Rav Amos Chacham on the. The Da'at Mikra points out the following: is that you see that tefillah, the word tefillah as used in Tanakh, is across the spectrum. It's at the very depths of her experience, and it's also at the very height of her reflection. Okay, the Tanakh already bridges that by the fact that Vatispalel is in both places. Don't think that prayer is only when you need God. Don't think that prayer is only when you feel happy. It's in both places. That's number one. Vatispalel Chana. Now, bearing in mind differing layers in terms of intent and in terms of what she possibly is thinking about, what do you think she's reflecting on here? Her heart is gladdened. Her mouth is broadened over her enemies. She's found salvation in God. What is she referring to? So again, over here, we can start talking about personal experience or expansive experience. Okay, so what the Mefarshim, most of the Mefarshim identifies, this is personal experience at this point in time. Is she has overcome her enemies. Who would you think her enemies would be? Right, so the most simple observation to make would be that when she refers to her enemies, we're referring to Penina. She's referring to Penina, her co-wife. But the Ababinel takes it even a little. It takes this even to a little more of a depth. The Rashi and the Radak already point to Penina, and most of the Mefarshim do. But the Ababinel points out a very fascinating point when she says, "Alatzli bi by Hashem, my heart is gladdened by God." And Rachav Pi, she's saying that what's she essentially saying is that where does the salvation lie? Only in God. Meaning, where is my entire salvation coming from? Only God, as opposed to let's draw in the foil. Who not? Maybe enemies, but the Arbavanel says maybe the people she trusted in beforehand. Remember that in the last parak she turned to her husband saying her husband saw that she was upset and he gave a response which didn't hit the mark, right? Didn't hit the mark. Then we have Eli, we're watching a lady like this, a distraught lady, begging from Hashem, and he doesn't get her either. What's the first pasuk of his song? Says Abba Benel, where's my salvation coming from? I realize it's fully in the hands of God and not in the hands of people. Do you see the emphasis? Where's the salvation? Where's the joy? In the hands of God, says Abba Benel. Yes, so now, the Abba Benel does not work with focus on the word Oyev. He simply focuses on the emphasis of Hashem. Right, that we wouldn't necessarily point, and I juxtapose them as if they were two separate Pirushim. Correct. The Oyev seems most likely to be Penina or people like Penina in her life. But the comfort she finds is the specific emphasis on Hashem. Ruth, that's a very good point. Not as two necessary separate tracks over here. And she continues. That's the introduction. She continues to say, "En kadosh kashem, there's no holy one like God. Ki ein biltecha, there's no one like you. Ve'ein sur kelokeinu, there's no sur." Sur literally means a rock. But also, and as Rashi points out, sur can also come from the words. What verb would you draw from this word over here? Sar is what's the verb of tsar mean? Tsara is a noun. But tsar as a verb can mean negative things, but it can also mean formation. Yetzira is formation. Ein tsur kelokeinu. There is no former like God. Meaning, in her situation, how is God acting in a creative process? Is giving her the child. Okay, so just notice that personal element over here. On the one hand, tsur represents the steadfast God, but also it's referring to a specific situation. The rock, but also everlasting foundation, but at the same time, formation. And that refers to her specific situation. One of the most important things do over here at the beginning of the song is they relate to her specific. They relate to what she's experiencing through this miracle. Let's take this a little further over here. Notice as well is that Kadosh, as used in Tanakh, usually refers Kadosh has ramifications both in time and in place. Right, the two constraints of existence. Ein Kadosh Koshen is no holy one like God, says the Radak. That refers to the central place of holiness at the time of holiness, which means the Mishkan at the time of the Moed, which is where she prayed for that child. So not only is there Ein Tzur Kelokeinu, Ein Kadosh Koshen, there's no holy one like God, where I was. I was in that particular place when I was praying to him. So again, what the Radak is doing is he's specifying, there's no holy one like God, where in relationship to how I conceived this child. Where was I at the Mishkan, the place of Kedusha? Again, very much personal. And she continues in Pasuk Gimel, Al tarbu tadabru gavoha gavoha, yetzei asak mipichem. Don't speak high, that the arrogance should come from your mouth, or arrogancy in older English. Because God is the one of knowledge, and let's not translate the end of the pasuk for just a second over here. So clearly, she's referring to people who speak arrogantly. Clearly, the reference is to, again, Penina or people like Penina. The Meforshim points out that it might not just be Penina, it might have been people in the neighborhood. You know, when they say, so how many children do you have? Oh, I'm so sorry. Or they make references. I mean, when people make references, not just Penina, she was living a life. This is her life. So when she's referring to this, it could be, as the Meforshim say, her whole life is people who speak arrogantly or in an insensitive manner. But this pasuk also is a good example of how Kri and Ksiv show you two different layers within the same words. So notice that there's parentheses in this pasuk. The parentheses indicate that the pasuk is read one way and is written another way. Now, interestingly, it sounds the same. Interestingly, in this particular case, it actually sounds the same, whether it has a vav or an aleph. But notice that the two carry different meanings. Says the Radak, what's going on over here? God is the one of knowledge. V'lo niskenu alilot. Let's take it lamed aleph. No. V'lo niskenu alilot. There are no actions against him. Meaning that God has a plan. And irrespective of what the humans will think, his plan will come to fruition. Lo niskenu alilot. That no other thoughts, plans, ideas will come to fruition in the face of God's plan. Option number one. But let's read it the other way. The lo nitzkenu alilot is that it's possessive with a vav. It's possessive. And he has, what does that mean to say? The lo nitzkenu alilot, and to him the thoughts will be arranged. Meaning, coming back to the first pasuk, who do we trust in? Only him. The only person upon which we can rely is the person who's Kel Deot, the person who knows what's really going on. And you see this reference again back to her dependency and her praise on that dependency on God. This is a very valuable point methodologically again, just to notice that when you have a Kriya Ksiv, there are different layers being conveyed within the same words. In the same words over here, we have a double meaning. And she continues. These are just little snippets, just again, a perspective of what's going on over here. She now says in Pasuk Dalet, switching on to page 5, she says, Keshes Gibore Chatzim V'Nichshalim Azru Chayel. We hear about the Wheel of Fortune here. The bows of the mighty are broken, and those who stumble are now girded with strength. Okay, the switch round of power, and again, this is referring to either in her own life or globalizing this to people in her generation. Or as the Targum Yonasan will say, in the future, referring to specific incidents that will happen to Israel. But most particularly her, that there is a switch round of power expressed in the same way. In the next pasuk, Sveim, those who are satiated by Lechem Niskaru, are now hired out for bread. Meaning they're hired out, they don't have anything. Ure'evim chadelu, but those who are hungry before are now cease to be, because they're no longer hungry. Ad akara yalda shiva, until the barren woman gave birth to 7, v'rabas banim umlala, and the one of many children was bereft. And so again, there's another two switches over here going on about the high going to the low and the low going to the high. But here this is very clearly resonating with her situation about having lots of children when she didn't have. And unfortunately, there's also the very, very dark side of what she says over here as well, which is that the rabbas banim, the one who has many children, will be bereft. And the Midrash points picks up on this and says that every child she has, Penina lost two. A very terrible circle that's being hinted at over here. Very, very sad full circle that's coming out over here, which is mentioning over here. How many children did Chana end up having, just out of interest? So it sounds like seven, but actually, in the next pasuk, she actually only has five children. Okay, so why is she talking about seven?
She doesn't have them.
So thank you very much, dear. What was that? She had Shmuel now, and then later at the beginning of the next parak, she's either talking about what she will have, but the Tanakh only records five children. Seven in general is a certain level of completion, so it could be poetically that this woman who had nothing in the realm of children is now complete. But also it's important to notice that Shmuel and Shiva are actually the same gematria. The early Mepharshim say this. The Radak really points this out. Rashi really points this out that she's referring to the fact that right now she has a seven. Who's a seven? The Shmuel. Yes, Esther.
The name Chana, is this sort of like Chana from Antiochus?
That's what I was thinking.
It's a very interesting.
I was thinking, it's a very interesting point. So what Esther's referring to over here is a story brought up later, which is post-Tanakh period, but where there's a lady Chana whose children are one by one forced by the Greek officials to either serve to acquiesce to Hellenism or to be killed, and she loses all her children, which is a very sad, interesting parallel in that. I've not heard anybody mention anything about that, but you see, there's something to say about that. I'm not sure how to relate it. Right now, she's specifically referring to her situation and the wheel of fortune of the other situations of people around her. At this point in time, yes?
This is a very fine line between sounding almost
judgmental and self. Great. So this is where the first thing we mentioned in the Radak becomes more relevant now. If she's speaking on a prophetic level, then it's not her. I mean, the point is that if she's speaking on a prophetic level, completely put into her mouth, then these words are prophecy referring to what will happen. But if you move to more towards the center or the left of the spectrum, that it's her own thoughts, but there's divine inspiration, then yes, there's personal input in this. And then, yes, this sounds more sinister than what she's saying. Is she reflecting reality? Is she talking about how she wants it or how she knows it will? Right, then you're right. Depending on how you view what's going on in her song and how much divine inspiration she has at this point in time, this becomes a very terrifying line. A point well taken. That's why it's important just to frame it at the beginning. Let's get through. I want to just flow through the last part, because at this point in time, the Radak and most of the Mepharshim point to the fact that now it sounds like she's leaving her personal realm and clearly globalizing, whether it be for the future or whether it be for people in her generation as a sign of hope. Listen to what the continuation over here. She continues in Pasuk Hey, and I'm going to read through just all the way through to the test for a second. Hashem emisamachaye morid mishal vayal. God kills and brings to life. He brings people down to the depths of Sheol, which is hell, Vayal, and he brings them up again. Hashem Morisha Ma'ashir, God makes poor and makes rich. Mashpil Af Meromem sinks down and brings up. Mekime Afardal Me'ashpos Yarim Evyon, predating Tehillim, the David's version. This is establishing from the poor person from the dust, from the very trash heaps, the poor person, lahashivim nedivim, to bring them among the nobles, the kisei kavod yanchilem, and bequeathing them a seat of honor. Ki lahashem etzuka eretz, because God owns the foundations of the land, vayoshes aleihem tevel, and he established earth upon them. Raglei chasidav yishmar ureshan bechoshech yidamu, ki lo bekoach yigbar ha'ish. The feet of his chasidim, this is not referring to chasidim as we know them today, the feet of his of those people who go beyond the call of duty, as generally understood, will guard, and the evil will walk in darkness. The evil walk in darkness, it's not through might. We all know too well, it's not through might that humans succeed. This pasuk is a very, very important thematically in terms of the song, but in terms of in general. This talks about providence as a whole. So at this point, I just want to advertise that there's a specific series on providence which I'm going to be giving starting tonight and next week, Wednesday night, for those who are interested. And because if you think about this pasuk, what this pasuk is saying at the end of here is that who are guarded are the chassidim, are the people cleaving to God tightly. Who are abandoned or given the wrong end of the stick are the rishayim. What about the middle section? Okay, just to be aware, she's not describing the mid range of people. Okay, so we should have to think about where that belongs. Not for now. Okay, she's describing the top and bottom end of humanity. At this point in time, it seems like it's similar to the theme she's been saying up till now, but doesn't seem related specifically to her life. These are just general ideas that things turn around. Hashem is in control of everything in the end of the day. That's the point, that you shouldn't lose hope. This could be a sign of hope to people around her, to people who are not in her specific situation, but people in similar situations. But here comes the pasuk which makes it, this sort of puts everything in context. This is the last pasuk. In pasuk Yod, Hashem yechatzu merivav, God should cut down his enemies. Alu b'shalav ha'shamayim yareim Hashem, and in heavens God should create a great, this is like a loud voice against them, or fight against them. Yadin afsei eretz, he will judge the ends of earth. V'yiten oz lamalkoi, will give strength to his king, v'yorem kerem mishichoi, and will establish the pride of his Mashiach, of his anointed one. Now, here's the point where, however you deal with it, this is clearly referring to something outside of Hannah's lifetime. Because there has not been a melech up till now, and there will be a melech who's going to be anointed by Shmuel, her son. So already you see something more than what her personal experience going on over here, specifically in this pasuk, talking about a king and a Mashiach. By the way, why would you think there are two, just out of interest? Well, why would you think that too? What's the difference between the Melech and Mashiach in this case? Great. The Shmuel anointed two kings. He anointed Shaul, who was the first Melech, and then David, who is going to be the ultimate Mashiach Hashem in the continuation of that line. She's clearly referring to points in the future, in her specific future. I just wanted to get a full hold on this pasuk for a second here. Who's she referring to? Who's the pronoun in this pasuk? Right? God will cut down his enemies. On him in heavens, there will be a loud voice, or there will be, how they translate it over here? There'll be thunder, they call it. He will judge. Who's the he? Who's this he? So now, it sounds like God, meaning God's doing everything on his own behalf. What the Malvin points out, following the Ralbag, following the early Mepharshim, and I think this is an incredible point, is she's not talking about God, she's talking about Shmuel. This pasuk is Shmuel, and therefore the Malvim says, you know what the overarching theme of this Shira as a whole is? Is 9 psukim of thanks, and 1 pasuk of request. That's the way he views it. Think about this. 9 psukim, where he elevates God. She talks about Hashem's interaction in her life, in people's lives as a whole. And then she makes a request. And she makes a request about Shmuel. There are 5 requests in this pasuk. Let's look at them. If you use the pronoun as referring to Shmuel. This is a very, very fascinating point. Yechatzu merivav, let his enemies be cut down. Meaning whose enemies? Shmuel's enemies should be cut down. He has many enemies. Yareim b'shamayim. Allah b'shamayim yareim. There'll be thunder in heaven for him. In Perek Zion and Shmuel, When Shmuel, there's a gathering of the Jews in Mitzpah, what happens is it says Hashem created a loud storm which terrified the Plishtim, the enemies. Not only on the ground in the battle should he succeed, but also there should be divine supernatural help for Shmuel. Third point, Yadin Avsei Aretz, let him judge over the extent of land. Could that be Hashem? But it could also be, let my son ultimately be the judge. Let him be the correct shofet that he should be. And finally, as Leah pointed out before, is Yiten Oz L'Malko, let him give strength to Shaul, V'yarin Ker Mishichah, and let him elevate the pride of David, who's going to be the ultimate Mashiach. So the way the Malbim views it, and I think this is an incredible way of looking at it, is as our Shemona Esra is aligned, is we don't just jump in there and read the laundry list, right? We walk in, and we walk into the appreciation of who Hashem is. Chana setting the tone, and at the end she puts in at the end, and please as well protect my son. Allow him to do what he can, prophetically be able to achieve. That's the way the Malbim views this as a whole, as a unit, which I think is a very telling way of looking at this shira. But it gets better. Okay, again, if you want to take it a little further, there are substructures. There are substructures. As we noted already, it seems like there's her personal life, the globalization to general struggles in life, and the conclusion about her child. Right, dividing it further. But there's also a beautiful chiasm over here. Okay, there's a beautiful chiasm. Chiasm just in literary theory, the most simple one is A B C C B A. Right, it's a technique used. A technique used is A B C C B A. There's a wonderful Dr. Seuss one. I should bring it in for a great example of a chiasm. But throughout poetry, there's chiasm. So in this specific one. There's many in Dr. Seuss, but over here, in our deal over here, you see something very interesting. Now, Baruch Leonard points this out, and I think this is such an incredible point. Listen to what's happening in her shira. There were many details. We weren't sure, are all the psukim necessary? Is everything doing something? Take a look for one moment over here at Pasuk Dalet to Pasuk Ches. This is the central point, the central part of her shira. There are three groups she isolates. One switch round is people who have power. The powerful will be broken down. And those who are lowly will be brought up. That's one switch. Switch number two. Sveim belechem niskaru, urevim chadelu. The poverty, the wheel of poverty and riches changes too. Power, riches, and finally, children. And now listen to that repeated to us backwards. Hashem takes away life and Hashem gives life. See, children. Right? She just finished talking about children. Children again. Hashem morish umashir. God makes poor and gives riches. Notice, that's category two. Back to riches. And finally, pride, power, strength in the world. That's what God's doing with that. Now notice something. In Pasuk, Dalet, and Hey, how many times does the name of Hashem appear? Pasuk, Dalet, how many times does the name of Hashem appear? It does not appear. In Pasuk, Vav, Zayin, Chesed appears, it appears once in every Pasuk. You see what's happening over here? What our Bible says is the following. Is when you look at the world, you see chance. When you look at the world, you know what you say? Some people have it lucky, some people don't have it lucky. And you know what? That changes all the time. Some people have lucky times in their lives, some people have unlucky times in their lives. And there's a wheel. The wheel of fortune turns. And you look at it. And you see it in power, you see it in wealth, you see it in children. What does Chana do? She brings you back those three cases with the introduction of Hashem. Hashem morish umashir. Morish umashir. Mekim afadal kilashem etzokaretz. What Chana is doing is she's taking these three situations in life and she's introducing into what looks like the wheel of fortune, God. You see what the song's doing over here? That's the central point, says our Babinol, the song. The complete switch around, introduction into these life events is God. And finally, to cap up, just to see the full power of what the song is doing. As a whole, we've seen the nine introduction to the one. Her praising God, her thanking God, leading to her requesting a child. We've seen within the praising God, her redirecting, the redirection of what people's view would be on reality by ABCCBA and in the reflection adding in God. And finally, notice that the song starts and ends like a book. She uses the same words. When she starts the song, what does she say? Rachav pi al olvai. That my mouth is widened over my enemies. And in the end, what does she say? Hashem yechatu mirivon. Hashem will cut down his enemies. Ramah Karni Bashem, she says at the beginning, my pride has been risen by God, has been brought up by God. At the end, V'yorem Keri Meshichai. Let His Anointed One be brought up. Do you see what she's doing? In the song, she starts with her as an individual, and at the end of the song, she concludes with Hashem's pride. Do you see, she has universalized what she started with. The enemies are no longer hers, the enemies are God's. The pride is no longer hers, but the pride is God's. Starting and ending with that expansion. The expansion, the universalizing of her message.